This is the Past Lives podcast, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. To get access to the extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives podcast Patreon campaign. And when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. I am on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to send me a message, you can do so through my website or on Facebook, where you'd be very welcome to join the Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. This week, I'm talking to Chris Batts about his book, Boom, The Life and Times of a Suicide Near-Death Experiencer. After the interview, I'm going to be talking about what PMH Atwater has to say about NDEs and suicide in her book, The Big Book of Near-Death Experiences. Hi, Chris. Thanks a lot for coming onto my podcast and giving me your time. The book we're going to talk about is called Boom, The Life and Times of a Suicide Near-Death Experiencer. Can you tell me how you came to have that title?
Well, I actually had a near-death experience, and it was a suicide attempt. And as I was writing this book, I was thinking of like a good title. And out of nowhere, my editor says, let's call it Boom, because I mentioned Boom a lot in the later chapters of this book. And the boom came from when I had I opened the door and jumped. I opened the passenger side of my friend's car. Then I jumped out, you know, as I was trying to commit suicide. And then when I fell on the back of my head, I remember hearing this boom sound. And that's where the boom came from.
Because you had quite a troubled childhood, didn't you? And you go into quite a lot of detail in the book.
What ended up happening was at 6 months old, I was told by my grandma when I was like 5 years old. I said, I want to know the truth. How come I don't know my mom? And she said, well, when you were 6 months old, she threw you in a dumpster, in a neighborhood dumpster. And one of the neighbors found me and said I happened to have been crying, a 6 month old baby crying in the dumpster. And the neighbor just happened to be taking out their trash, and they heard a baby crying, and lo and behold, they said, oh my God, I know his mother. And she took me out of the trash can and called my grandma and told her.
And so from then you started living with different members of your family.
Yeah, because obviously my grandma tried to get custody of me, and my mom ended up losing it to the court judge because of throwing me in a dumpster. So that's when the judge told her, you'll never get him back ever. So my grandma took me, and this happened, my grandma took me till I was 4 years old, actually. So when I was 6 months till 4 years old, I was with my grandma.
And then you lived with your aunts, didn't you?
Yes.
And so can you tell us who was Uncle Rabbit?
Uncle Rabbit was one of my aunt's husbands, and this is my uncle by marriage. And he wasn't blood related, but he treated me exactly like I was his own. And I've been around him ever since I was 5 years old. And I was always wanting to be around him. I wanted to be like him. People loved him. People respected him. And I was always looking at him, and he was an elderly man at this time, maybe in his 70s, but he was like in shape, like he was young, and he was just always on the go. And I wanted to be just like him. Like he treated me like a human instead of, well, you're a kid, your opinion doesn't matter.
So he was like a father figure.
Yes, he loved me, and that was the only person in my family that, because I didn't really know that many people in my family anyway, like a handful of people actually knew, and but he treated me better than all of them.
How did the near-death experience come about? You were in a car?
Yeah, actually, because I went through a few years of being suicidal and depressed and everything, and I ended up planning this for a few months, and my plan was to go jump in front of a train track and just stay there and lay there until the train comes. Okay, boom, then I'm out. Then I thought about drowning in water, and then I came to the conclusion as I was, because I ended up taking the train. I was like, you know, I'm just going to go with the train track. But as I'm walking to the train track, a friend of mine called me, and they called me and said, I see you walking, and I see you walking, stay where you are. And they knew I was going to commit suicide somehow, because they knew of my inner like problems. You know, they knew everything about me. So I was walking to the train track, and they just happened to be passing by that way. And they called me and said, get in the car, get in the car. So I got in the car, and my friend was driving. They made a right turn right by this police station in a church. And I actually was talking on the phone with my mom before this happened. And so I'm in the car with my friend, and as she's driving, I'm in the passenger side with the phone, like on speaker, like, cause my mom, I haven't talked to her in years. And she ended up calling my grandma to get my phone number. My grandma gave her my phone number. So she calls me and said, your grandma gave me your number. And I just wanted to tell you that I don't love you. I don't want you. And you know, I don't want anything to do with you. I'm not your mom. I don't love you. So with being suicidal already, while I'm in my friend's car, I'm like, man, my whole plans of laying in front of this train are ruined. Now I just need another plan. And without thinking, I hung up the phone with my mom. I closed the phone. I tossed the phone out of the window. And then I looked at my friend. I said, F this. I opened the passenger side of the door, and then I jumped out. And that's when you, boom, heard the boom. And then I blacked out.
Before you did that, what did you feel was going to happen to you after you died?
At this point, because I grew up in religion and church every Sunday and Monday and all throughout the week, so my religion taught me to fear, like, everything. They taught me to fear God, to fear hell, and that's all they talked about was hell. So, like, if you breathe the wrong way, like, you're going to burn in hell. It seemed like they talked about hell all the time. And being suicidal as I was, and the way my life was going, I was like, you know what? Screw this. I don't care. Whatever happens, happens. It was that bad. I said, even if I burn for eternity, nowhere will be. I mean, that'll be the same thing that's going on with me right now, because I was suffering every day anyway.
So then you had the boom, and where did you go? Did you have that thing in the near-death experience that people often think that you would hover over your body and watch what was happening? Did that happen?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I just ended up in this like black like void. I didn't really know what was going on. But before I even left, actually, as soon as I blacked out, I was gonna get up, and something kept telling me I wouldn't do that if I were you. So I felt like a struggle of going outside of my body. Like, I didn't know I was going outside of my body. I thought I was just getting up. But as I got all the way up, I see my body laying on the floor, and then boom, I'm midair, like in this void. And that's when I heard of God, you know, God's presence. I seen God's like presence. I didn't see his actual face and his arms and all that, but I felt his presence, and I heard him I heard them like through like my ears and my heart. So
did you feel at this time or at any time that this was the Christian God, or would you say it's just a great powerful kind of source of energetic energy? I don't know how to describe it.
The presence was so strong that basically what you were taught as a child comes back to you. It's like, oh my God, this is exactly what they were talking about. But you felt that supreme being. You felt it. And it was so powerful. You just know there's no running away from it. It was it was love. That's what it was. It was just this beaming light and love.
There's a sentence in your book. I'll just read it. And then, because I wanted you to go over this a bit more detail. You say, when I refer to God as male, that's a simplification too. I felt the most motherly love from God, who was still the most macho man ever. So how do you join those two things together?
Okay, well, the motherly side came. Well, the first presence I felt from God was his dominance, the male side. I was like, oh, I think God's definitely a male. And the first thing that the presence said to me was, I am God. Yes, I am real. Yes, angels are real. They're a gift from me. You want to meet them? I said, no, because I didn't believe in angels. And then after that, as God proceeds, or being a God source, whatever you want to call it, proceeds to tell me more things like, I love you. I'll go to the end of the world so everybody's with me. Basically saying he wants everybody to be with him. And that's when I basically seen the motherly side, when I felt the presence drop down on the knee and squeeze me and give me a huge hug. And I didn't want that feeling to, or that being to let go. And so that's why I brought the motherly feeling. But it was beyond a mother's hug.
Did you feel at all that there was any kind of judgment towards you because the way you had ended up in that place?
No. No. I honestly was not judged at all, which of course I thought I was going to be, but I wasn't. They, like the source, God slash source, kept telling me he loved me. And that's when he snaps like this finger, then I meet my guardian angels, and they didn't judge me. They kept telling me to be, they kept saying, don't be scared. It's okay. Don't be scared. We love you. It's okay. We're not going to hurt you.
And so in that position, did you see them? What did they look like?
My guardian angels, I seen them. Yes. I honestly seen them as I would see anything else. So they were about maybe 8 feet, 5 to 9 feet tall. I'm sorry, 8 feet, 6 to 9 feet tall, something like that. And they were huge. One on my right side had a red flannel shirt with the sleeves rolled up to his elbows and blue jeans on and brown curly hair. And he was like a really, really buff. Like you can tell, like he works out a lot or something. Like he had a lot of muscle. I mean, he was really muscular. And then the one on the left side was sort of like a beetle type creature with wings. And they both had wings, by the way. And yeah, he had like wings, and they were out and long and skinny. And the one on my right side's wings were like long and thin.
And did they have names?
I honestly did not want to know their names until I told them this. I told them, I don't want to know your names until I see you again. Because I already knew what they looked like. So I'm like, I want something to look forward to. Like, don't just spill all the tea yet. Like, I want something to look forward to when I see you again.
And so when you were in that void, were there other kind of spiritual beings there, other entities, or even people that had died and passed on?
No, this was just with my guardian. I was just strictly seeing my guardian angels. And they actually, as they were talking to me, they tell me to look down. And I look down, way on the concrete, and they zoomed in like a camera, and I'm like, wait, how am I here? But my body's down there. Like, this stuff really happens? And I was really looking at my body, and I was looking at the paramedics over me. And the friend I was with, she was off to the side on her phone.
It doesn't sound like she was being very caring. Was she calling the police or something?
No, this person, that crossed my mind too a lot. Like, when I think about it, I'm like, yeah, like, she was really on her phone.
When you were in this white void, how was your perception? How was your eyesight and your hearing?
Perfect.
Yeah, so much better than it is now.
Yeah, the colors are perfect. The hearing is perfect. The vision, you can see miles and miles and miles away.
And when you saw the angels, did you feel that they were presenting themselves in a particular way for you, and that they could have presented their image in any way they wanted?
I really do. I believe that.
The imagery that they showed you then is, do you know there was a what reason they chose that?
I don't. I haven't asked them about that. I just know that they wanted to come make it as simple as they can, something I will relate to, so they can get my attention, because it was like a rushing kind of thing for them. They're like, okay, we need to go and just, let's just introduce ourselves to him, because he's going to cross. Oh, because there was this cloud and it had a hole. If I were to go into that hole, I would have went to like a paradise slash heaven place. And who knows if I would have came back. So their main objective was, hey, let's get him, let's convince him to go back and spread love and help people.
So they wanted you to come back for that particular reason?
Yeah, because they told me, they said, you have a lot to do for so, it's not your time. You have a lot to do for so many people.
That hole in the cloud that you describe, could you see what was through on the other side?
No, it was just light. It was just light that you know leads to, that light basically makes you, I guess it makes you finally believe that there is an afterlife. Because like, for the person that doesn't believe in an afterlife, I was that person. I eventually grew into that person that believes that whatever happens, happens. I don't care. When you die, you die. And yeah, there's a whole nother life after we leave here. So that's why I don't really say people die. I say people move on.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyze what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. You said there was no judgment from God, but did the angels say anything about how you'd got there? Or did they say anything about what led up to you getting there?
No, not at all. They said nothing about what I did. All he told me was, it's okay. We love you. It's okay. Don't be scared.
And how did they communicate? Was it talking or telepathy or something?
Telepathy. Basically, what ends up happening is, okay, you're thinking of a question and they're in your head, they're answering that question back in their head. Like, so the way they speak to you, they you hear what they're saying in your mind, and you feel their emotion behind it with your heart. So like if they're mad, if they're happy, if they're serious, if they're, you feel that emotion in your heart. And yeah, they send, like, you can hear, you can basically read what they're telling you from their mind to your mind, and vice versa. And that's, and you don't really have to use words. That's the whole, it's like the whole telepathy process.
It sounds like a much more effective way to communicate than we have in our normal lives.
Definitely. And a lot of us do it in our normal lives and don't even realize it.
How would you describe these angels then? Would you say that they were in any way religious, or perhaps they were beyond that?
No, I just know they're light. They had so much light on them that they don't know about this whole, they know a lot of stuff, but what I'm saying is they don't like the whole religion title. It's too limited. There was and on that side where they live, it's not like that. You're not limited. If you don't do if you're not this religion or this religion, we can't be friends or we can't agree.
Did you feel that when you spent your time in that place, you had a body, or was it just like you were just floating there? You couldn't actually look down and see arms and legs.
I had a body, but the thing was, I was so nervous, I didn't look at it. I was looking at my angels' bodies and their clothes, but I wasn't looking at myself.
And there's one more sentence that I picked out of the book that I thought was interesting, is that you said, I found myself knowing and understanding so much in this strange place. What does that mean? And also, does that mean that you had a load of knowledge while you were there, but when you came back, you lost it?
Yeah. That you have a lot of knowledge there, and there's only certain things that I remember when I came back. They, out of all the stuff they told me, a lot of the stuff that I share in my near-death experience, in my book, and those are things that I remember. There's so much more that I don't remember.
Would you say that the angels have had lives on Earth just like we have, or that they're in some way, I don't know, beyond that or above that, or they're just a different kind of being?
I honestly don't know. I still wonder about that question, and I still hear from my own angels. I still talk to my angels. They still haven't answered that question for me yet. Because I'm like, have you guys ever been here before? They haven't answered that for me yet.
So then what happened next? Was there a life review or something?
No, but if I went into that hole in the cloud, yeah, I would have seen my life review. Or life reviews. So, but what ended up happening was they kept looking down. They tell me to look down. I look down again. They're like, no, you need to look down again. And like I said, you could see from miles and miles away. So as I'm looking down, I see my body when I'm way up in the sky. I'm looking down at my body. Then it just zooms in like a camera. And then they're like, so, you know, you have so much to do for a lot of people. I'm like, man, this really happens. And so they looked at me and then they said, do you want to stay or do you want to go? And I said, you know what? Without a doubt, I'll go back. And at that moment, it stopped becoming about me and started being about me going back and spreading love and helping other people and letting them know that, like, once you leave here, you are gonna be loved on the other side too. And a lot of people like me were suffering because they didn't know the truth, and I was always in search for the truth, and I actually got to experience it and come back and tell about it.
And how was it when you moved back into your body?
I don't know, because I didn't wake up till days later.
Okay, so you were in a position where you were looking down on it, and then the next thing you knew, you were waking up in a hospital.
Yeah, days later.
And also, you had quite a quick recovery, and they referred to you as the miracle.
Yes, they said they thought I was, the doctors and nurses said out they thought I was gone, they called me miracle, and as soon as they see me wake up.
Because you were in a coma for a while.
Yes.
And so going forward from there, you had some rehabilitation that you had to work hard at. How was that?
Well, I just stayed, honestly, I didn't go to like doctors and like therapy places and like rehabilitation places. I basically just wanted to heal by myself at home. And I had like a lot of migraines and horrible migraines. They said I had a concussion and stuff like that. And it was, yeah, I had a lot of migraines. My face was banged up. I had road rash, which are burns from the concrete of when I jumped out of the car. And yeah, it was a lot of pain, like in my back and my head and shoulder and elbow. And I just basically, I also couldn't, for the first few days, really like walk much because I was wheelchaired out of the hospital. So I basically started trying to practice around the house, just walking. And then I got good at it after a few days. And then after that, I started trying to get my speech back because I couldn't really talk without my tongue getting stuck. And I couldn't finish certain words. I couldn't smell. I couldn't taste anything. And eventually, over a few months, I started getting these back. It took about maybe six months for me to get everything back, maybe a little longer.
And in time, the angels communicated with you again. How did that come about?
Well, one day when I was trying to basically practice healing myself, I got out of the shower one day, and I didn't really remember my experience. And then I just remember my angels. They're like, yeah, like I was like, remember me? I'm like, oh my god, like I remember you guys, you know. And this is through telepathy. And they told me, they said, empty your mind of everything you've ever known, and we're gonna teach you what you need to know. So that started from how I walk, certain ways to move as I walk to get better at walking, then word pronunciation, maybe ways to pronounce words and to get my speech better. And after that, it progressed from them telling me about like the truth about religions, how places to go on the internet and look, things to Google. And then, yeah, they start telling me about like spiritual things, like our chakra systems and so on and so on, stuff to eat healthy, maybe dress differently, get into a different career. And that's what I did. I went from basically hard labor and stuff to now I work with the school district as a special ed instructional aide. So like a lot of things have changed since I have had a relationship with my angels.
And do people you know say that they've seen a big change in you since that accident?
Everybody that knows me tells me that I'm a completely different person, like night and day. The things I say, I used to get mad a lot, like really, really fast, like really, really, really fast. But now I have a little more patience. I have a lot, lot more patience than I once had.
And is the communication with the angels still happening today?
Yes, it is.
How do you know that it's not just like you're just imagining it? Is it something that's really powerful?
It is. And also, when I first started hearing from them years ago, I actually had that same question, but they compared it like people's personality. If somebody were to call me on the phone after this, after I get off the phone with this conversation with you, and somebody tells me, hey, like, I just interviewed you, and they're not you, I would know, because they would have a different voice. They have a different spirit. They're a whole completely different entity. Like, you just know the difference. Like, somebody saying they're your mom or your sister, but you never even met them in your life, it's like the same thing. So if another entity were to come and tell me something, I know the difference between their voices.
And something else you said in the book is that the biggest lesson they taught you is how your mind controls everything. So what do you mean by that?
Well, because your thoughts bring objects. Like, what I mean by that is, like, the way you think can really manifest something. Like, you might say today's going to be a bad day, and your mind has energies. We're all made of light. We're all made of energies. So our brain definitely has, like, so much energy. It has the most energy, isn't it? And the universe is full of light, and that light feeds off of your brain, like your thoughts. So whether they're good or bad, that's what the universe might bring back to you. So if you're saying, well, today's going to be a horrible day, and you really believe that, and you keep those same thoughts, the universe is going to basically take all that light from you and bring it right back to you. Then you are going to have a bad day.
So if somebody is feeling really down, feeling depressed, then are you saying that it could be like a negative circle and they'll bring that back on themselves?
It's, yeah, exactly. Like me, in my experience, when I was just thinking so many negative thoughts, that led to suicidal thoughts, that led to depression, all that darkness around my mind, it was being presented to the universe, and I kept getting it back. And I had no idea that I was doing that.
And does this affect the energy fields that they told you about around your body?
Your chakra systems, yes, they definitely do, because your negative thoughts will shut down your, because it's like I say, it's like light. If you have so, like, I think I look at it this way. You have so many light switches in your chakra systems and your body. So when you think dark, negative things that are dark, you're turning off those light switches. And pretty soon you're just completely dark.
And then it's really difficult to switch them back on again.
Very, very difficult to. Very, it's hard to turn them off, but to get that light back is hard. And that's why it's very important to be as positive as you can.
Are you able to call on the angels anytime you like, or is it up to them when they talk to you?
The thing about them, they talk all the time. Whether I'm asleep, whether I'm awake, they talk. And I talk to them too occasionally. Certain things I might ask them advice on, certain things I might ask for their help on. But I'm still a pretty stubborn person. I'm used to figuring things out on my own. But there are definitely certain things, like, they have stopped me from car accidents before. I mean, there have been times where they're like, no, don't go this way. Turn this way. And then I would do that, and next thing you know, there was an accident here or there, like, and I would hear about it on the news.
It's fascinating to me to hear all this stuff that you're talking about with these angels, and I got so many questions. Is it always those same two angels, and have they ever talked about other angels?
Oh yeah, there's plenty of other ones out there, but pretty much they're my guardian. Like, they're responsible for me. Their jobs are to, like, they basically promised our creator that they would help me. And I believe each person has their own guardian angel or angels, because some people have one, some have two, some have three, some have a whole group of them, but I happen to have two.
And do you think there's a way that anybody can communicate with their angels the way you do? Is there anything you'd recommend?
I do. I believe anybody in the world can communicate with their angels if they want to. The thing is, though, you have to have an open mind to do it. You have to have your mind open, and some people don't have their mind open, and they can't. You can't receive anything if you know your head's closed, and they're not going to force themselves on you.
So they're just closed down. They're not going to pick it up. And there's a lot of skeptics out there, aren't there, who might say your story or anybody who claims to have had an NDE is just nonsense. And I suppose if their minds are that closed down, they'll never get any kind of communication.
Yeah.
There's a lady in the book you write about, Katrina, and you talk about an incident when she needed some fuel for her car and a woman turned up and gave her the money for the car, and it seemed like a bit of an odd story in the book, like you were suggesting this woman that handed the money was more than just a normal person.
Yeah. So she told me that she went to the hospital that day, and because she didn't go in the ambulance with him, I guess, with the paramedics. She went in her car. So she ended up, I guess, using the last of her gas to go to the hospital, and said somebody there came up to her and said, "Oh, I know you." They told her name and then said, "Oh, here's some gas money for you. I know you don't have any gas money." She's never seen this person before. And then the next day when she came to look for this lady to pay her money, her gas money back, she wasn't around, and said she told the nurses and the staff the person's name, and they said, "No, there's no one here that works by that name. There's no one here that looks like that works here."
So that is weird. It's almost like that was one of Katrina's guardian angels.
Yeah.
And have you seen your guardian angels since the NDE? Have they ever actually appeared?
No. They haven't appeared like I've seen them before, but because they know it would freak me out. I would be scared to see, because they're so huge that it would scare me. And maybe one day, but I think if I were to ask them to let me see them, they would. I really believe they would.
It seems a bit weird that you would get scared by it with all the things you've been through.
True, but when you're not used to seeing how huge they are and what they look like and understanding these are angels, these people have wings. If I was around angels all day, every day, okay, yeah, bring it on. Show me who you are. But I'm not used to just seeing angels every day. So, yeah, I just need a little time before I see them again.
Okay. And do they ever do little things, I don't know, close to you, maybe in your house or something, and you see something and you think, that was the angels that did that?
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of times I've seen certain shadows and I knew it was one of them.
That would scare me if I saw that, I think.
Like little silhouettes.
Yeah, but I suppose it's nice to know that they're around.
Yeah, they are.
You have met now other people who've had near-death experiences, and do you find that theirs are very different to yours, or there is a consistency?
A lot of us have the same type of outcome in our experiences. A lot of us come back with the same message, and that's love. Love is the most important thing ever. You have to love people. People need to be loved. That's the most important thing. And that's what a lot of other experiencers come back. That's the message they come back with.
What would you say to people who are in a very dark place? What sort of message would you give to them?
To understand that even though it seems like you are alone, you're not. There's someone out there that does care about you. Just you have to really open your eyes and see it. You might have to just really think deep, but there's someone out there who loves you.
And there was one point in the book where the angel said to you that you must pay attention. But pay attention to what?
to pay attention. These are certain things they told me to pay attention to, like when my angels were teaching me how to access my seven chakra centers. They were just telling me, pay attention to how you walk, like focus your energy on like this muscle or that muscle, or, you know, like, don't stand like this, stand straight up more, stand tall, like stand confident, like stand. So certain things like that.
And have you had much negativity from people around you when you try and talk to them about your experience?
Surprisingly, no. I actually get a lot of good feedback, and they want to know, they want to hear more.
And you did kind of reconcile also with members of your family and get onto a much better relationship.
Yeah, my grandma, before she moved on, she was really sick, and I went to visit her, and she was always mean to me, but I was just always, my family was mean. That's just how they were. And when my girl, I haven't seen my grandma, I don't know, it's been about, it was almost a year since I seen her. So she was sick in the hospital, and I went to go see her, and I knew she wasn't coming out before I went in the building. So I went there, and I made peace with her. I made her laugh. I wanted her last memory of me to be making her laugh.
And did you feel the angels were with you at the time?
Oh, they were all over me and her. And they told a friend of mine on Facebook, and out of nowhere, the person wrote me and said, your angels wanted me to tell you that, don't worry about your grandma. She's gonna be with them.
So she would move on to her angels and go to her special place. And I suppose there's no kind of judgment for her, like there wasn't a judgment for you, because I've heard that in a near-death experience, when people do have a life review, it's a case where people judge themselves rather than it coming from somewhere else.
Yes, and that's what a lot of other experiencers have in common. Like, a lot of experiences have the same, like the same message of love. They have the same, it's like the same experience. And that's what I love about NDEs, because it's like, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's true. It all has like that same message in it.
And another thing with near-death experiences I've read is that they have after effects where perhaps they can't wear wristwatches because they just won't work, or lights won't work properly around them.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That's the reason I used to always wear watches. That's so funny you bring that up. I used to have so many pictures where I would wear watches. I can't wear watches now because they never work. The battery always goes out. Even a new watch, a new battery. I've tried it all. It never works. Like, it never lasts me like more than 2 hours until it stops working completely.
It's so weird. It's like the energy field in your body's being changed in some way, and that's what's affecting it.
Yes.
And do you ever have there's other kind of side effects. They talk about having psychic experiences or really strong synchronicities. Does anything like that ever happen with you?
Yeah, you can actually sense people's personalities very well. What they call a discernment. You can see their true intention. And that's a gift. That's a real gift.
I just going to say, I suppose that would really help if you're trying to buy a car or something.
Yeah.
We've been talking about the book called Boom, The Life and Times of a Suicide Near-Death Experiencer. And how have you found the response to the book from the near-death experience community?
The near-death experience community has really embraced my book, my story, my message of love that I'm spreading out. I have so many supporters. I have the hugest support system, and I'm so grateful for it.
Great. And the book is on Amazon, isn't it? Can people get it other places?
Amazon and Kindle.
Well, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast and giving me your time.
Thanks for having me.
And that was an interview with Chris Batts. The fact that people have a near-death experience when they attempt suicide does not come up for discussion very often, and I thought I would talk about what PMH Atwater wrote on the subject in her book, The Big Book of Near-Death Experiences. This section is titled, What Those Who Attempt Suicide Say. Early in his research, Kenneth Ring, PhD, did a study to examine the differences, if any, between episodes that sprang from illness, accidents, and suicide. He discovered that suicide survivors tended to have brief accounts, usually peaceful, but lacking in the complexity and depth of those that resulted from other forms of death. Dr. Ring's study was duplicated by other researchers, all finding basically the same thing, except of late, which we'll discuss in a moment. Like other experiences, suicide survivors were seen as returning with a better outlook on life and a renewed sense of self-worth. But while providing renewed meaning to their lives, their episodes were not a cure-all. Most experiencers were inspired by their scenario to realise that it was up to them to straighten out their lives. A typical case was a young man who intentionally overdosed on drugs and ascended to a level of peaceful, warm light during his near-death experience. He felt loved and forgiven for what he had done and was infused with the awareness and energy afterward to make significant changes in his life. He became evangelical in his desire to share his story so others would not be tempted to make the mistake he had. He commented, "Since then, suicide has never crossed my mind as a way out. It's a cop-out to me and not the way to heaven. I hope my experience will help stop someone from taking his own life. It's a terrible waste." And so the next section on suicide near-death experiences is called Later Stories. This is what PMH Atwater had to say. As more near-death suicide survivors began telling their stories, their accounts have called for a re-examination of former conclusions. Newer work has uncovered a much broader view of suicide reports, with the scenarios ranging from horrific, hellish encounters replete with such imagery as dungeons and grotesque half-animal, half-human tormentors, to heavenly scenes, life reviews, and angelic guides who comfort as well as instruct. Perhaps the reason for this deviation from past reports is that more people who have attempted suicide are coming forward to share their stories, so we're learning more about them. Whatever the case, we can now say that scenarios arising from suicide attempts can cover the same gamut of content as any other near-death experience and have the same impact. Some respond favourably to what happened to them, while others do not. One of the newer accounts that contradicts early research is the case of Stephanie Johnston of Richmond, Virginia. "At that time, my life was a mess," she told me. "My relationship with my fiancé ended dramatically and unexpectedly. I was hospitalised for 30 days due to the fact that my blood pressure had skyrocketed to 210 over 180, borderline for a stroke or heart attack. I was released right back to the same stressful situation that had put me there. I finally decided that I wanted the pain to end, so I took 2 bottles of pills plus a fifth of booze. I lived for the next 3 days on heart monitors, as there was no counteractive drug they could give me. I experienced leaving my physical body in the ambulance. I could hear the conversation my friend, who accompanied her, was having with those who attended me, as well as what they reported to the hospital from a position outside and above the ambulance. I could see inside and outside the vehicle at the same time, and I could see surrounding houses as we went by. The next thing that happened was I found myself in a different place. The best way I can explain this place is it was a different dimension from what we know as the physical. Things were not concrete and fixed, but somehow fluid, yet not liquid. I conversed with a group of people there. They did not have physical bodies, but were more of an energy that was iridescent. I had no fear. There was a scene of peace, almost as if I was dreaming. But I wasn't dreaming. It didn't feel strange, it felt normal. There was no pain, nothing physical, just me sitting there talking to these people. They were telling me things, yet it wasn't verbal communication, more mind to mind. I was given a life review, but I was not only shown what my life had been, but what it would mean from this day forth if I were not there. Not only did I see this, but I experienced what it would feel like for others, for people I knew and loved, and for people I had not met yet. I was told that I had a choice. I could stay, or I could return and complete my life. The choice was up to me. I felt no pressure. I felt that whatever my choice, it would be all right. There was no sense of judgment of myself or others. It was the most overwhelming feeling of unconditional love, so totally accepting. And there was such a sense of freedom. All this seemed to take a long time, and yet there was no time at all. If this sounds contradictory, I agree, but that was what I experienced. This experience was not of this world, so to explain it in regard to this world cannot be done. The next thing I recall, I was being in the emergency room with a doctor. He was reciting my daughter's name. I credit this doctor with being very attuned, for if there was anything that could have swayed my decision, it would have been my daughter. I can't say that I woke up spiritually enlightened. I woke up to the life I wanted to leave. I was angry I didn't die, and stayed that way for quite some time. I was still rather self-destructive. After about 2 years of horrendous anger, I found myself on my knees praying. Okay, God, you're not going to let me die, so teach me how to live. I then started dealing with myself and my life. I began to seek professional help as well as God's. Okay, so that was an interview with Chris Batts, and we talked about his book, Boom, The Life and Times of a Suicide Near-Death Experiencer. Don't forget, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so through Patreon. Visit the homepage of my website, pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, and click on the Patreon button, or go to patreon.com/pastlifespodcast. The podcast is also on YouTube. There's no video, it's just the audio, but that's another way you can access the episodes if you want to. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.